Off the ball.
Rugby.
Absolutely loves what he said. He said, we need to develop more X-Factor players in key positions. Like, that was his first entry into being the director of rugby.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
It is the Hurling Pod's first live roadshow of the year. We're here with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. Unfortunately, before we bring our guests out, Skell, you're not going to be able to make the second one.
No. I can't say... Well, my sister-in-law is getting married, so I think I'd be probably enemy number one in the house if I skipped that. But we are going to do a live video from the wedding.
Okay. We're going East Coast for the second one. We said we would come back to Limerick. We promised we'd do it because everyone was looking for it, Paul.
Yep.
We're going back to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, the Friday of the All-Ireland Final, with the audience that are here, probably Limerick and Clare side. Some of them might be going up to Dublin for the weekend anyway, depending on what happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to be there. Ticket details and details about the guests will all be on stream in the next few days, so keep an eye out on Off The Ball social media, probably our own social media is where we push this as well. We're going back to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, July 19th. It is the Friday of the All-Ireland Final. So massively looking forward to that. Not looking forward to Skell not being there, but we are going to find some kind of way of contacting about the wedding. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's so rare, like.
I know.
Zoom call at the wedding. I just look around to the bride here like this, yeah. Talk to Will and talk to him. Sick.
I'm sure it'll be fantastic. All right, let's get to the second half of the show then. Sean Ogre's going to be back with us for the Q&A as well. But let's first of all bring out a man who won an All-Ireland title with Clare in 2013. Jewel Clare with the Banner County as well. Obviously, ridiculously popular with the Clare fans who are here. Let's first of all bring out Podge Collins.
Hey, Podge.
I'm Podge, mate. How are you?
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, Podge grabs a seat and the lads grab a seat. Let's play a little bit of video because this man was involved in the first All-Ireland title that was won this season, the All-Ireland Under-20 Championship. Awfully becoming champions for the first time ever, a Limerick man in charge, Leo O'Connor. Let's have a look at the video.
Hi, Leo.
Thank you, boss.
Hey, Leo, we're going to shake hands with you.
He has made his way onto your senior team. He led from the front today with some incredible skills. He comes from a wonderful GAA pedigree. A proud son of
Leo, given it was like a three-day party, I would imagine this is probably memories coming back maybe for the first time after what happened there.
Yeah.
What scenes, though? 26,000 people in all the park.
Yeah, there's an actually funny story about the speech. Dan Burke, obviously captain, his mother and father had a speech. They were getting the speech to him. He got over the line. Grandmother during the match for Bill and was taken in an ambulance out of Northern Park to the hospital. But that is a book. I was down with Dad and Michael Doigan was behind him and we were prompting him. And Charlotte Burns was prompting him who to thank because the mother and his father had gone looking after the grandmother. So it was just like, thankfully she's recovered, everything is fine. So Dan's speech, just looking for it, it was just one of those surreal moments. And it's only when you get up and when you look down on top of the crowd.
Good timing.
No, it's just the affinity, the atmosphere, the whole thing that's attached to that team and that dressing room, more than anything else, that it really was a very unique occasion. And like 2022, to be robbed in an All-Ireland final in 2022, beaten by a better Cork team in 2023 under 20, and to eventually get over the line was absolutely massive for this team.
Yeah. Crazy scenes. I was chatting to Tullamore the next day. There were 6,000 people that came out for that. Bigger attendance than some counties get, which is people coming out to chase young lads for autographs the next day. There is something just kind of crazy about this team, isn't there? Like, I've never known an attachment to an underage team like this ever before.
Yeah, I just think that the work that the Offaly County Board did, especially when they were minors, I suppose, really, in getting the crowd behind them. Certainly 2022, when, you know, I suppose the first real big crowd that turned up was the Leinster Minor Hurling Final against Laois. Match put back 15-20 minutes because the crowd couldn't get in. everything just associated with it. And I think it all developed from that. Offaly County Board offered buses to all the schools. There was 48 buses. And basically what actually happens is, because a lot of the kids that were going from primary schools, so there's a parent had to travel with them, right, on the bus. So suddenly you had kids half and half. The mix is roughly half and half. So that's where the crowd came on board, and particularly when you got over the line that night, such a unique occasion, was absolutely massive for us. And to win it in the style that we won it that night, I think that they played exceptionally well that night, and probably their best match of the year in 2022, that team. And to develop it from there, and suddenly the crowd latched on to everything. James will tell you this year, even the under 20 matches, there's a huge crowd above in the Round Robin series this year against Galway. So, like, the support, the passion, I suppose it's really what we witnessed earlier from the passion from Sean Ogue. You can see that Irishness, that total vibe. And Offaly people were starved of success for a long number of years. And then when you get over the line, when they're waiting for such a long time, it was really massive for them.
Given, I would say, one of the most painful sporting memories you've had on the field was the 1994 All-Ireland final. You're on the pitch, Limerick are 5 points up, Offaly Robbie in the five-minute final. I can hear people nervously laughing already about where this is going. Do you end up in a position like you're like Eamon Creegan, your club mate,
yeah,
where you go up the road and then win an All-Ireland with Offaly? I'm sure you probably never thought that was going to happen, did you?
No, not in a million years do you think these things happen. Like, so, just abiding memories of 94 when you're 6 points up, 5 points up with, 5 minutes to go. And I always remember this one thing that happened that day, and players, just Paul Murphy, you know, we've all been there. And you get to a certain stage, and I remember going down, and Gary had a free, I think, about 55, 60 yards out. And I was just inside corner forward, and I asked the umpire, I said, what's left in it? Right? And he said, 4.5 minutes, he said, from the puck out. Right? And next thing, Joe Irty, who was marking me, Joe goes, that'll be the longest 4.5 minutes of my life. And suddenly, 8 minutes later, when the final whistle is blown, and you turn and you look at your opponent, you shake, put out your hands and you shake hands, and he goes, well, that was the shortest, 8 minutes of my life. Turned out to be the shortest 8 minutes of your life and the longest 8 minutes of my life. So from that point of view, you know, things that happens in sport that really no one can account for. Balls bounce a certain way, players drop balls, turnovers, stuff like that. It's just sport. It's what unique about the GAA. It's what unique about hurling.
I didn't mean to take away from one of Podge's accolades, been involved with Mary Eye this year. We can probably throw up the video of kind of the emotional finish for Mary Eye in the All-Limerick final this season with Jamie Wall, your cousin, which you there as well, Podge. And you were telling me during the break, you were coaching against Sean Ogue.
Yeah, I don't know if it's fair to tell this story when Sean Ogue's not here. But
He can come back and defend himself later.
He's here in the background. We played UCC in the first round, and UCC had a phenomenal group of players, and like, they were trying out different things and different players on the pitch, and thankfully we were playing in the Talton in Mary Eye, and it's a tight enough field, and we got ahead, and in fairness to our lads, like, they got a run on UCC. And the second half then, it was getting tight and it was getting nervy, and like, Shane Barrett and Brian Hayes and Ben Cunningham were in the Cork forward line, like, so they were getting a few balls into the hand, and we're kind of getting worried, so we need to kill a bit of time, slow the game down. So Jamie says, go down, tell Galan, hit the ball down over the line as far as he can for the next puck out. We'll try to slow it down a bit. So I was like, right, go down to Galan. He does it. Great long puck out, kills a bit of time. Ball comes back into field. We win it, I think. Get another score. Galan looks out to me. I was standing at 45. Jamie was in the other 45. He was like, do it again. I was like, we'll do it again. We'll do one more. So. Anyway, hits it down, goes over the line. Just over the line now, this one. It wasn't as obvious as the first one. Third puck out, not long left now. He looks over at me again, and I was kind of like, yeah, go on, just... I didn't really want to do it, but I was like, go on, yeah, do it, go on, sure. So anyway, Paul goes over the line. So after the game, I was like to Jamie, I was like, you know, we probably needed to kill the game a bit, and, you know, it probably helped us get over the line. It was a very strong UCC team, and it was a tough game. So me and Jamie go over, and like, Sean Ogue would be one of the most respected people like in GA circles. Like, he's just a gentleman, and went over and shook hands anyway. And everyone's kind of gone off the field. It's just me, Jamie, Sean Ogue, and Jason Glanz coming out with the bag of Hurleys. And as we're chatting to Sean Ogue, like, commiserating, and Sean Ogue's one of my idols growing up, Jason looks at Sean Ogue and goes, that was their idea, no? So I went bright red in here, and I was just like, I'll chat you again. So
anyway. Tell me this, so soon after retirement, what brings you into coaching? Was it Jamie giving you a call, or were you always kind of attracted that way?
It was Jamie giving me a call. I was probably retired very young, I suppose. I just kind of started picking up niggles. I was chatting to Murph about earlier at about 28. It got very frustrating. I was picking up niggles the most important time of the year. And anyway, I decided to pack it in. And I suppose you've kind of got this window from when the club ends to when the club starts. And I'd be very involved with the club at home. We play hurling football at a decent level. And the Fitzgibbon kind of window just fits in nicely in between the club championships. So when he asked me to get involved last year, I said I would. Didn't enjoy it at all because I wasn't there the whole time. You're trying to play inter-county football. You're coming and going. I actually missed one of the Fitzgibbon games, which isn't right. The players won't respect a fella that's not there all the time. It's something that I've experienced throughout my career with lads kind of coming, popping the head in every now and then. So this year, when I retired from football, it was like, you know, there every session, every day, and it's way more enjoyable. Before the Fitzgibbon competition even started, from the league games and everything like that, and seeing parents of players kind of coming to games and chatting to you after. It was a really enjoyable experience. So, yeah. Good start. Really enjoyed it. And, yeah.
Do you miss playing the intercounty game? Because, you know, Sean was talking about that adjustment a little bit earlier on. And, look, I suppose you had so much played between hurling and football at a young age with the 21 teams that you come through in Clare. You win All-Ireland at a young age. And then you're going at both codes for as long as you possibly can and having to kind of go between the two panels. Like, you put a lot of miles up on the clock at an early stage. How have you found the last year and a bit been away from it then?
Yeah, I love the Jose Mourinho Dele Alli clip. I don't know if you saw that, where he's chatting to him and he's like, it's over, like, tomorrow it's over. And, you know, and now looking back on it, it is. Like, someone rang me before the Limerick Clare game in Cusick Park and they said, listen, I just want to chat to you about the 2018 game. And I was like, against Limerick in the park. And he was like, yeah. It's like, geez, I was like, was I playing? He was like, yeah, you played the whole game. I was like, geez, I'd have to watch that back. But do you know, like, it goes past in the blink of an eye. Now, I remember Reedy and Tom Condon got sent off that day, and that was my abiding memory from that day. But just going back, I suppose, to the 21s and starting off with that, we had a really successful 21s team, probably buoyed by Colm Galvin and Tony Kelly being midfield for 3 years, and they were unbelievable. But there was two WhatsApp groups in 2013. There was lads that were on the senior panel, there was lads that were off the senior panel. And the WhatsApp was called the B team. And there was nearly lads in the starting team that wanted to be on the B team because the crack was just so much better than that WhatsApp group. So when the senior All-Ireland was a draw, the 21s was the week after, and the lads that were on the seniors got a bus to a pool recovery session. And the lads off the seniors had a great all night. So I know great memories under 21. It's a class competition, and to see the scenes with the Offaly team was magical for the whole country. I think everyone enjoyed it and everyone got behind him. And I don't think he needed any prompting in that speech. I was saying on the podcast, he left out on purpose, he left the three cheers. I was saying, on purpose, I think that thing needs to die anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't think other teams want to hear it. So everything about him that day, I was very impressed, and he's kind of showed against Cork as well at the weekend what a player he is and what a young man he is.
You have to be very happy, Leo, with the way Dan has been developing. Like, at the senior panel, he's been very, very important. I thought he had a great game in the Joe McDonough final as well. He was hustling, harrying. Keelan Kiley said afterwards, like, this is honesty about him that's there. Obviously, Screeny gets a lot of attention, but Dan Burke is really fitting in well as senior, isn't he?
Yeah, Dan came into the scene as a minor. He played 2 years minor with us, and he's just one of those phenomenal young fellas. You know, the myth of the story about Sean Ogg after winning the All-Ireland, and Sean Ogg gets up and does a 5K the following morning. Mm. Well, let me tell you this. Number two has arrived, that's Dan Burke, because Dan Burke is just a fitness fanatic. We'll go out and play senior hurling, play a National Hurling League, come in train the following night, and he's inside the dressing room and he's waiting to go out. Yeah. Right, doesn't say a lot inside the dressing room, but he's a leader on the field. You know, he's the utmost respect from all the lads inside. And then Screeny is just, you know, he's a magician. He does all the spectacular things. But for us, inside, Screeny's work rate is probably the most important thing that Screeny really does. And when you see Dan Burke, Shane Rigney, you know, Lee Kavanagh, these guys around the place, their work rate has really converted this team and brought this team to a different level. And you know, you can't survive the modern game these days without work rate. It is what it is, and you know, you have to have the fitness levels, the aerobic fitness, not to be getting too much lost in the gym work. Certainly we're a small team. I wouldn't say a small team, but we're a light team. When you look, you know, there's still an awful lot of work to do over the next 2 or 3 years. I keep repeating myself to the people of Offaly, this is not going to give you a divine right to get back up. Okay, they're back up McCarthy Cup level next year. It's really, really important. And everything takes on a new lease of life when you go up to that level. It's going to be particularly hard to manage next year, because I just think there's 4 or 5 of the team this year overage for 2025. There's 10 of them that started in the All-Ireland final underage. And I'm sure that Johnny Kelly will want a lot of them.
You'll want to try and win another All-Ireland.
We want to try and win another All-Ireland. So, you know, we're just going to have to manage it game by game.
You've enough, Leo. You've enough, dog.
No, but they're the challenges. And like we all have enough common sense to know that these are the challenges that you've got to put in front of teams when you're managing teams. And Podge will tell you that. Like, at the end of the day, you know, winning Fitzgibbon Cups, winning under 20 All-Irelands, and when you're at Limerick stage, winning McCarthy Cups and going for 5 in a row, you know, you have to have a challenge and you have to have a goal. Mm. And each, like, how do you fatten Screeny? Like, you know, how do you fatten a rasher? You know, you put him into a gym, and he's the one that's over, you know, Paul, yeah. he's the one that's over there taunting in the corner. You're going, Adam, yeah. Back across, yeah, I'm coming. You know, he's just one of those characters. He's larger than life, and, you know, the accolades that have been thrown his way, yeah, fine, he's done spectacular things, but he couldn't do them without the other 14 on the field that are pushing him. And I think his own work rate as well, and like the likes of Dan Burke, Dan has really blossomed and really pushed on. And I knew the Woods the minute he got to Croke Park, and it was brilliant to see him in Croke Park. I was able to sit in the stand above him, the Hogan stand, and watch him in Croke Park, and they became alive up there, particularly Dan. Like, his work ethic, the amount of ground he covers, his GPS reports, they're off the Richter scale.
Okay, didn't miss a minute training, they said, either the week before the McDonough final.
No.
Which, understandably, he could have. Your captain, yeah, every distraction possible.
But that's Dan. Mm. That is, you know, he's so level-headed, just unforgiving. I'm here, I train. No, Dan, you don't train tonight. You take it handy tonight. But no, I'm here, my body is here, my hurley's here. You know, have gear, will travel. That's his attitude.
Before we look into the weekend coming, Podge, what advice could you give? I'm not, by the way, putting any pressure on these lads to go 21s to seniors in the rate that you guys did with Clare, but for someone who's coming through and now going into senior hurling, what advice would you give to those lads?
Just a quick backstory. Just I came across Leo when I was, 19 on the Clare 21s, and they gave us a nice old pace and above an Ennis, so the misery Limerick have caused Clare started years and years ago. One of the selectors, actually, interesting enough that day, I think, was John Kiley, was he?
Yeah.
So what happened to him?
But Kevin Downs and Dowling and a few other lads, Declan Hannan was playing the same day, it just shows, like, with a bit of experience at that level, like, it's so important. So I'm sure, like, coming into Offaly at that age group, like, you'd have great experience built up throughout it. But there's nothing, like, from those lads' point of view, I remember Seamus Flanagan came out after the 2018 Ireland, he said he didn't want to just win one, he wanted to keep pushing on, and in fairness he backed it up. Like, and I just from seeing these Offaly lads and the way they carry themselves, like, they're going to want to push on, they're going to want to win more, and it's going to take massive dedication and massive work rate and good people around them. And in fairness, I think Offaly have got that. I think Offaly, like, their county board seem to be, like, talk about bringing, like, kids from schools to games and buses to schools to games, like, that's just a massive initiative, like, to promote hurling, and hopefully the same with football in the county. And so they're doing everything right, and just, like, those lads will know themselves, like, just push themselves, people will be on to them. You have to put on X amount of weight and blah blah blah. It's like, get a good S&C coach in with them, do it gradually, manage your hurling, don't forget about that. I'm sick to death, like, I hear James O'Donoghue on your sister pod, the football pod.
The fine pod, go on.
Yeah, talking about he's seeing lads in the gym, but he doesn't see the lads with a football in their hands as much anymore. Like, and it's so important that lads keep that hurling in their hand. Their skill level is so important. And it was actually Dan Burke, when I was watching that 21s final, he took a ball at full pelt, standing nearly straight as just a jab lift into his hand. And I was like, you can't, like, forget about the gym. Like, to have that skill, the gym stuff will come. But just to keep the hurling in the hand and keep doing what they're doing, and all that stuff, get good people around them, and that'll come. And hopefully they have successful careers, not at Clare's expense.
Can I ask Leo, is there a concern, Leo, in Offaly, that if you expedite the likes of
Adam and Dan Burke to senior level that they're not physically ready. Because next year now, Adam Screen is going up against Mikey Butler, Owen Donnell, Dahi Burke, these people. Like, so is he going to be thrust in straight away to the first 15? Like, I know you said about the S&C part, and I get that, right? Skills is the first for me too, but he has to be able to survive, first of all.
You have, James, and it's a very good problem to have what Offaly have at the moment. The other side of it, and the question that you're posing, I suppose, is that how do you integrate it, right? Personally, this is just my opinion, that I think National Hurling League, Adam played against Wexford this year, below in Wexford Park, on a miserable night. And I think people's eyebrows were lifted because his work rate was so high that night. But that's fine on a scale where, like, people are going 75-80% National Hurling League. But certainly, I think next year, they're going to have to be integrated properly. Like, the whole full forward line in the McDonagh Cup final that, like, lined out, were only 20-23, mm-hmm. you know, under-20s. So from that point of view, it's a gradual thing that they're going to have to introduce them. On the big day, I think they'll be okay. But it's on the day, the preliminary rounds, the quarterfinals, when you're going in against a Hugh Lawler, when Adam Sweeney's going in with the ball against Hugh Lawler, and Hugh Lawler has in his mind, he can't let him walk by him, so he's putting him into the first row to stand. So from that point of view, you know, it is what it is. And, like, it's a man's game. And that they're the things that really, you know, the backup that Offaly are going to get over the next 2 or 3 years. And I don't think it'll happen overnight, and I've said this. And to answer your question, it is a bit of a problem. It's going to be how these players are looked after, how the matches are refereed, James in particular. You know, you've seen Adam live. You know, he is an elusive character, Dan Burke. Dan has really stood up. Dan is one of those guys who's able to take it and will come back for more. But in terms of what Adam has, it's going how the match is refereed, how referees see it. And from Adam's point of view, what I think the most important thing that we looked at from Adam's point of view is creating the space that he's able to get onto ball, that he's getting the one-on-one situation rather than being involved in the rucks. You know, the first 20 minutes of the McDonagh Cup final didn't really suit him, where he was out around the half forward line trying to get onto the ball and turn and break from there. And it's only when he went in back inside, when the ball came across, turned, pops it over the bar. That's Adam's game. So from that point of view, I just think that the style of play is going to have to suit him as well. So from a coaching point of view, there are a lot of small little issues before you have the finished product.
Mm-hmm. Murph, if you want to start with this weekend, first of all, the two games staying in the Saturday, what have kind of been described dead slots early on the Saturday afternoon in Semple Stadium. We obviously heard all about the vote. We were talking about in the pod before it actually happened. The flip wasn't ultimately going to take place between the Tailteann Cup and the hurling quarterfinals going to the Sunday. Does it feel a little bit lost on early Saturday this weekend, or does it make a difference?
Well, I think just as a point, I think it should have been later in the day. Nothing to do with the football or anything. Like, I know the Euros are on, and that's probably one of the things that's pushing it back, but, like, we've often seen, well, in this instance, hurling games move to suit another sport. I don't think our national games, whether it's football or hurling, should be moved from the national channel to suit football for one day, or for soccer for one day. So I think it should be given the space that it's needed. And we kind of, I think by doing it, we pitted hurling and football against each other, which was also needed. Because, to be fair, I looked at it from my point of view, like, I've played those quarterfinals in Thurles, and I'm fairly sure I've played the early ones as well, but I didn't see why the football lads should move when they got their fixtures, they planned, and now hurling is coming up against it. For me, it was a case of, I think it's the kind of Euros is getting in the way of the hurling here and the hurling being pushed forward. So for me, yeah, like, definitely both teams would prefer, and I think spectators would prefer that it wasn't so early in the day. I don't think it affects, like, it's the same for both teams, so it won't have any effect on results, nothing like that. But I just think in terms of the status of our games, you know, these are important games for players, they're important games for spectators. I think a time slot that respects that, and if it means that, you know, a national competition like the Euros has to go to, we've seen other channels pick up these things, if it moves across to the news channel or wherever, fine.
Well, the rugby's already gone to the news channel, so yeah, there was potentially that slot there.
That's the only thing I have a problem with, but I completely understand also the football point of view. Like, you know, the Sligos and these lads who have their own agendas, they have their own priorities, they're saying, you know, the lads who are playing Tailteann Cup, they're saying, look, well, we have our fixtures, you know, should it come across. So I did have sympathy for that, but look, it's unfortunate for teams as well, but at the same time, you just have to get on with it. Lots of times, I've played fixtures as well that it doesn't necessarily suit us, but the first thing you say is, like, you don't make excuses excuses. Just say, look, we have to get on with it. It's unfortunate, yes, the conversation of the crowded calendar will continue. Like, this will be something that, into the off-season, will speak of this crowded calendar. And again, no more than your lads. 11 games in 8 weeks, you know, mm-hmm. you're talking Adam Screeny's 10 works. Like, that's something we have to realise as well, that the split season is working, from what I can see, but at the same time, there is one stat where you go, that's very tight. And then also, if we have quarterfinals, like, quarterfinals are big things. It's you know, quarterfinal can kickstart a team back into the championship again and go and win All-Irelands. We've seen plenty of teams do it. So I think just giving it the weighting it deserves and keeping it at a time that facilitates people getting to the game and is at a suitable time for people. But in the greater scheme of things as well, I would be saying, look, from a player's point of view, if I was playing it, I'd say, grand, get on with it. We'll play it. We have extra few hours to recover then if that's the case. Look at the positive, get on with it. And if that's what it is, just play it. If it's on a Friday night or if you want to throw it in Friday morning, play it. But just don't worry about it and get on with it at this stage.
All right. Let's jump directly into Clare Wexford then. Podge, this week, Skell made the claim he's no longer convinced about John Conlon at six. He thinks that Clare have got an issue right down the middle of the field. Do you share the same concern?
No, I'd fundamentally disagree with...
Surprise, surprise. No.
Skell's calf has been renamed, but go on.
I know, like, I just... When I see... when I see John moving on the field... And, like, I know he followed Tom the last day. And, like, that's a different role than what John's used to at six for the rest of the championship. So I just feel like if you're... And I'm sure you're not, because I know you've watched all the games. But if you're just basing it off that game, are you?
No.
So no. I just see John's... I see his mobility. I see his agility. I see his speed. I see his make-up pace. I see him moving with the ball. Fair enough, a few passes went astray. That happens. I don't think it's a common trend in his game. He'll look to it, he'll rectify it. But, I think he's moving as well as ever. I know Skell said, like, he reckons that teams are going after Clare now down the middle. I don't think that's the case. I'd have to see, like, if you did a montage for me there, Skell, we'll have a look at it. But I don't think so. That's just my opinion, looking at John at six. I think he's moving as well as any six in the country.
I think Clare probably... I'm not trying to throw shade at management here now, but I think they have a structural issue, to be honest, right? So you're looking at their game plan against Limerick, and it's like they just went man to man completely, right? Which is not the way to play against Limerick, if you ask me, at the back. So what I was pointing out was you had Dave Mack hip to hip with Gareth Taggart on the sideline. You then had Jim O'Dwyer hip to hip with Tom Morrissey on this sideline, and the whole open field was in front of John Conlon, there, right? And so what that happened then was clearly, for me, that full back line clearly needs help, right? I don't think they can challenge one-to-one like Limerick can, right? So that means John Conlon needs to be deeper. But the way Clare set up doesn't allow that. So he's getting completely hung out here to dry. So I think what I was trying to allude to is there's a massive structural issue, if you ask me. John Conlon needs to be in the position that Declan Hannan's in. Declan Hannan's allowed to go up, come back. Declan Hannan's 2 points around the opposition 65, but then he's back covering because he's four lads in front of him. He's Hegarty, he's Morrissey, he's O'Donoghue, and he's Cotter O'Neill, others provide so much protection. I just don't see Clare have that.
I want you've said in that monologue that the Limerick full back line can match 1-on-1.
They can survive themselves, yeah?
Yeah, but I don't think... Well, like, I think they can, but I'm just saying they don't need to because they get protection. Like, when the ball comes... They just have to break it forward and they have cover. Mm-hmm. So, like, I do think, like, the Clare full back line probably don't have as much as that, but their management are going off previous games at Limerick. Now, unfortunately, we've come out on the wrong side of some absolute ding-dong games with Limerick. And, like, going into it, you're only going off, let's say, the last five appearances where there's, like, a point in it. Limerick are coming out the right side of it, and we've gone man-to-man in those games. So I suppose, in hindsight now, looking back on it, you'd look at maybe we should have changed something that Munster final to try maybe a different approach against that Limerick team on this given this year. But I think they were just going off the previous meetings with Limerick, and that's why they went man-to-man. And they tried... I suppose, get the matchups as right as they could, and that's who they went with. They went John and Tom, they went Dermot on Cahill, and they went with David McEngrode Hegarty, who's matched up well against him in the past. Do you know what? They've had some...
I'm not trying to shade it clear, but I have to ask you, right? Your six backs right now, are you confident that you can win the championship with them in their current positions? That's not a load of questions, I'm not trying to draw you out.
I know, I have to go back.
I'm not trying to draw him out, honestly.
I have to go back to this.
We'll go get a pint, Leo. Go on, you keep going.
I have to go back to this now, and it's like in 2022, Clare were playing Kilkenny in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
And I thought Clare were humming. I was like, we're going lovely. they were playing really well. I was going to all the games. I was watching them. I was like, we're playing really good stuff. And then I met Tommy Walsh. I work with Tommy from Kilkenny. I was like, geez, Tommy, what do you think? I think Clare have a very good chance. No, Kilkenny will win. And I was like, geez, how are you so sure? And he was like, no, Kilkenny will win. And I was like, geez, I think Clare will win, Tommy, just looking at the form. And he was like, yeah, no, I'm telling you. So anyway, what happened that year happened. And then I was like, right, year after then, I met Paul for the semi-final. And I thought Clare are going right well here now. And
I'm biased.
I said to Paul, I have Clare a right chance now. And Paul was like, no, Kilkenny are going to win. And you know Paul, like he'd keep it level. Like he'd be like, oh, it'll be a close game, but no, Kilkenny are going to win. And
stop talk is right twice a day anyway. Keep saying Kilkenny, they'll eventually be right.
I know, they were right on both occasions. But
I do love that Tommy offered you no logic, by the way.
No, he's answering my question. Stop this now. Okay, stop this now, right? You got way off now. Come back in.
Right, easy there, Paxman. Go on. What's your question again there?
My question was the six backs, right? That's where I no problem from number 8 up to 8, right? We're clear. But my issues are from 2 to 7. Do you think the backs you have at the minute in their current structure are good enough to win Ireland?
So you're going after Limerick game. I think that's the only game they went man to man all out.
Current structure, that's Hogan, that's Cleary. I presume Rory Hayes comes back in. That's McInerney, that's John, and that's Jim O'Dwyer.
I thought Conor Lean was excellent in the Munster final, so I think he'd start.
Well, for me, he's the only man that can play the ball out.
Conor Lean?
Yeah.
You're getting rid of him. You'd already hear he's in cornerback.
For me, right? Oh, so when I'm looking at Clare, right, I don't think... If I give the ball to Adam Hogan or Conor Clare, again, I'm not throwing shade, right? I'm happy to...
You're throwing a lot of
times. No, I'm just now.
I'm happy to give them, right?
You can't say that about 5 times.
Hold on. Hold on. See, not everyone has the Limerick, you know, they're not spoiled like Limerick have. Like, you can give it to Nash, give it to Morrissey, they work it out great. But if you give it to Hogan, give it to Cleary, you know, I'd be confident that we can shut them down. Limerick have seemed to have that in the sense that they allow you to hear as you play out the back, and I don't think they're able to play out from the back. Personally speaking.
Yeah, I don't think we got too many turnovers in our back line. Do we have enough to win the championship? I think it's a very good Clare team if we get Ryan. I hope Ryan Taylor gets back fit. He's another addition to midfield. He strengthens everything. Great to see Tony playing. Regardless, I do think we've a very good chance. I think we're in, I don't know what the odds are, but I'd say, if you were to look at it, I'd say we're third or fourth. So I do give us a chance.
Fourth at the moment, yeah.
Fourth, yeah. So I do give us a chance with the current backs we have. I had Adam and Mary. I've seen him with Fekal. He's an excellent cornerback. He's well able to play ball when he gets the opportunity. Cleary, I remember there's this misconception about Cleary, about his hurling. But we used to do these kind of alley challenges, and he was always top three. McGrath was always one. Cleary was second or third. He's well able to play ball. Conor Lean, I've been very impressed with him this year. David Mack, first game back from injury. Give him, we'll see how it goes on Saturday. Now we're going to, it's going to be a very challenging game.
Sorry.
And I do. To answer your question, so I do give us a chance.
We got there.
Fucking hell.
One of Clare's biggest problems, though, James, is that they're being forced, when they're playing Limerick, Limerick identify who they want the short puck out to go to. Mm-hmm. Right. And Limerick put massive pressure. There's Garrod coming down the line, there's Aaron Gillan working hard, getting across, and they're targeting the person, right? But the biggest problem that I think Clare have is when Clare are going through this lull period where they go out of a game for 5-10 minutes, right? Maybe bring Shane O'Donnell out centre forward. Maybe give themselves a target where Shane O'Donnell is winning ball inside. Fair enough, he's a massive goal threat when he's inside, right? But when they're going through that 5-10 minute period where Clare drift out of a game, and Limerick, as we did in the Munster final, when we took over and we really pushed on, right? If you bring Shane O'Donnell out centre forward and you take the pressure, right? Put more pressure, you're putting pressure on Declan, right? Because Declan needs to step up. Or William O'Donoghue, as you said, Cathal O'Neill, they're very, very good at sitting and protecting Declan. And that's what they do. Mm. And that's what Limerick trained to do. But if you bring Shane O'Donnell out there into that pocket, right? And get ball. The Clare ball coming out of their back line, I think, is too slow. As you said, Connor is the one who's really able to deliver it. John Conlon is able to deliver it. David McInerney in time, when he gets, is able to pick out a very, very good diagonal ball. Right? And I just think that maybe that 30, 40-yard ball, that if you do bring out Shane O'Donnell, that Shane O'Donnell will be able to come collected. He has a good hand, come collected, turn, and he's running at you then. Then you're pushing teams back, because teams are... They have to literally get their status right, you know, from that point of view.
Yeah.
So I just think for that 10-minute period, maybe, it might be something that Clare could look at. is just bring Shane O'Donnell low centre forward, bring him into a get him into a pocket, and where they're able, where they have an option, instead of going long with diagonal balls, which David McInerney tends to do, that Shane is 30, 40 yards off him, that he can come and pick it out. That might solve Clare's problem.
Because they brought him there during the second half against Limerick, they brought him out in the half forward line. Because I know conditions were difficult with the breeze, and the puckouts were landing in a zone where you don't want them landing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And that was fodder to Limerick. So I think it's a horse for a course too. Like if you're in Croke Park, I would happily bring out Shane O'Donnell and get him some attention there. But like that day, like just Limerick just ate them up. I don't think people understand how well structured Limerick are in terms of their tackling and their spatial awareness of tackling. Everyone uses the word work rate, which is great, right? But these lads are able to work for 70 minutes and they work efficiently, like in groups of twos or threes. It's amazing to watch. And they're obviously training how to tackle. See, you're training, let's say, obviously tackle technically, right? But even from closing down space, it's absolutely awesome. Where they identify the person, it's like sharks heading for the two of them. Then the next lad comes, two more lads, and it's so hard to break them down. And it becomes so tiresome over 70 minutes that you haven't got it in the tank, like. Mm-hmm. It's simple as that. And then the lads who come in, the Adam English, etc., it's just a continuation of saying the team level does not drop. So when I ask him, again, I was not wanting a loaded question, I'm just saying, I'm looking at Limerick, they're the standard bearers, and I just think Clare, they have the personnel individually, but they need to be way more collectively, you know, in tune, you know what I mean? So we look at Fitzgerald, great going forward, but we need to have Fitzgerald. Duggan, I think, is underrated, to be honest, for Clare. I don't think he gets the props he deserves, because he's not getting all the points the likes of, you know, Fitzgerald and Kelly, etc. He's tackling like mad. He's hounding like mad. He's winning all the puckouts. You know what I mean? He's winning far more puckouts than Fitzgerald is or Tony Kelly is, but he's not getting the plaudits for it. So you have to match, I think Clare have to match Duggan's effort, intent, everything, and become far more structured. And then I think they can challenge, of course.
Do any of you disagree with Clare beating Wexford this weekend?
Well, even down as favourites, but the thing is, like, I think Wexford are looking for Anton at the moment that draws into a bit of a siege mentality. Like, Wexford are a dangerous team. It's not too easy to just write them off straight away. And, like, I remember, like, Podge, the year you won the All-Ireland, you played Wexford in Thurles. It was a 50-50 game. I remember it was that game, you couldn't bring water bottles onto the pitch, and it was about 30 degrees. It was less nearly dying on the field. And that game kick-started your year, really, from what I remember. You got a real bounce in that game, and it kicked you on. I'm not saying that's going to happen for Wexford. But these games, like we're looking at Clare coming into this game with a little bit of a question mark over just how they finish the Munster final. We know they have the quality, we know the calibre. And to be honest, you ask me now, yeah, Clare win the game. But it's not as simple as that, because Wexford have shown savage form throughout the year and then just kind of, you know, faltered a small bit. But players like Rory O'Connor have been coming really good. We see Conor McDonald coming back into form, supporting Lee Chin, who has been flying it all year. So it's not as simple as that Clare arrive on and by drifting through third or fourth gear they go and win this game. And I think what's important as well is that if Clare don't start well, that's where it may be fuel to the fire with Wexford, where they go, we're going to shout here, this Clare team is taking 10 or 15 minutes to warm up. And we've seen that in several games throughout the year. You know, if you look at Cork going down to Waterford, Cork off the back of their league should have started really well. Waterford start, and now suddenly Cork are treading water. Then there's been several games where teams haven't approached it properly, started really well, leave the other team in it, and now suddenly it's a dogfight. If it comes into a dogfight, Wexford are very dangerous. But like, ask me now, yeah, I say Clare win, you know, 4 or 5 points. They have the quality, they have the calibre, and they have the bench. But I don't think it's just that straightforward that, you know, they deserve that they turn up and a third gear, fourth gear performance is going to just get them over the line.
Who's your fancy, Leo?
I was at the Wexford Kilkenny match this year, Paul, one below Nolan Park 3 weeks ago. And I just saw something in Wexford that day, and like Wexford have been so inconsistent over the last number of years, but with Keith Rossiter over him, you know, he's their own. Like, he has the players. We were actually going in training after it in Nolan Park. We were going out onto Nolan Park Field training the week before the All-Ireland, and even though Wexford were beaten, right, and you know the dressing was better than anyone below Kilkenny, like, I could hear, I was talking to Keith, and I could hear, you know, there was a confidence, like, that it wasn't the end of the world. They were after qualifying. And I just think that, as you mentioned, Conor McDonald, Rory O'Connor, Lee Chin, three forwards that will walk onto any inter-county team. And then you have, he has a small little bit of a bench that he'd never, that Wexford hadn't had in the last number of years. Kian Byrne, Podge, coming onto off the bench as well. Like, they were very, very fit.
Yeah.
You couldn't be but impressed with them. The whole attitude was really... And if Clare have any bit of a hangover from the Munster final,
yeah,
it could be exposed.
Yeah.
And I would hate to be chasing Wexford below, because I think, no, it's unfortunate with the Fianna Gael on Saturday, I'm blowing Wexford, and Wexford have to go and play Clare. It's really, you know, I don't know how they think about promoting hurling when you've an under 14 All Ireland below in the county and they're playing All Ireland quarter final. But if the Wexford people come and Wexford take the challenge, and I'd hate to be chasing Wexford from a Clare point of view with a hangover of Limerick. That little bit, you know, we all know what it's like, you know. That it's in the back of your head, and if Wexford take the challenge to Clare, I just think that it could be an interesting game on Saturday.
We're going to bring Sean Oak back up because we want to talk about Cork and Dublin a bit as well. But while we're bringing Sean Oak back up, and Aisling is out there with the microphone as well, if people have got questions from the crowd in a second, I've asked all three of these a few times, where you compare Limerick now compared to last year. You're covering the games for Live 95 as well. Where do you think Limerick are at right now getting ready for the semi-final?
I think Limerick are in a perfect situation. I think if works to form, that Cork beat Dublin. I think that Limerick's motivation to turn over the 3.28-3.26 result will be absolutely massive. I just think that Limerick are where they want to be, and they go an extra gear again. They go into that sixth, or if there's a car with seven gears, I think Limerick have that energy when they get to Croke Park, and they exploit the space above in Croke Park, and more than anything else, I think they exploit the surface that's there, and the pace that they play at it. And I think Limerick, with the motivation of Keane not having, setting the world on fire right at the moment, I think when Keane gets back to true form, I think that's another chink in the armour for Limerick, that, you know, they'll go and exploit that. Garrod is really beginning to hum. Kyle Hayes has had a phenomenal year. Nicky Quaid, you know, everything, and as you say, like, it's very, very well drilled, and it's down to a fine art. And then throw in Adam English, Aidan O'Connor, we only saw for 5 minutes against Cork the night below Park Keith, but Aidan O'Connor, to me, is a player that is going to have a huge future. He's one of the players that I last dealt with in Limerick Underage Academy, and I think that he's going to have a huge future. Cahill O'Neill, and as I said, the Adam Englishes, they have all that when the game opens up with 5-10 minutes to go. They're all players that are capable of scoring, and it's all set up. But the Cats.
I know.
Paul Clare.
Is Paul Clare?
I know what he's doing here. I did the Limerick supporters club before the All-Ireland last night, right? Did the Limerick supporters club, and I was down in the Woodlands in Adair, and I was going down to it, and I was like, God, this is going to be unusual. I'm going to be one Kilkenny man in a room full of Limerick people. There's going to be family members of the Limerick players inside in the room and all this. So I was like, what will I do here? And Eddie Brennan was doing it the following night in... he was doing inside, I think, in the city. So I rang Eddie. I said, "Hey, you've probably done a few of these yokes. What should I do, like, when you go down here?" And Eddie goes, "Oh, butter him up to fuck." He goes, "My boys do it now. I'm not playing any of that."
I was at the Leinster final, and Kenny don't do tactics, as they say.
Go on.
They don't. No. But they lined up against Dublin they tried it for 15 minutes, 20 minutes against Dublin, where they had four in the full back line. Four and a half back line, and it was the game was totally under control. But they're trying a tactic for later in the year when they get to Croke Park, and it's envisioning Limerick coming down the line. You know, that they had four and a half back line, four and a full back line, and they still had their two midfielders. They still had Keane Kenny all around the middle of the field, and TJ. And interesting, the day against Wexford, right, I was right behind the goals looking down behind Owen Murphy. And when the pressure came on, after Keane Boran got the goal, game was down to 2 points. There was about four puck outs. Right, at last four puck outs of the game. The third last one went straight down the middle on top of TJ. TJ caught it, right? The second last puck out in the game, it went down the left-hand side of the field, but TJ and Walter had come on at that stage, and they were underneath it, right? And the last puck out in the game went down over to the far side of the field, and Walter was underneath it, and TJ was waiting for the break, right? So, like, they still go to their go-to men the whole time, Kilkenny do, but the tactic against Dublin, with four in the full back line, four and a half back line, and Tommy Walsh, Mickey Butler, Hugh Lawler, they're all very, very comfortable taking short puck outs. So, from point of view, James, of what you're saying about Limerick and what Clare do, Kilkenny have that, the benefits of taking those short puck outs, and they can work it out the field. David Blanchfield, that wing back, I've been hugely impressed with him. He's something that, he's as close to Dermot Burns as that I've seen when Dermot Burns in the last 2-3 years. Like, these guys are taking on a life of their own, and I would not in any way write off Kilkenny this year, because I think that they're priming themselves. They've come through Leinster really, really comfortable, and they're looking for the big day coming down the line, and I think that big day is the guys in green and white.
Not sure if Paul Murphy rates Mikey Butler or not. He's never mentioned it before, so... I think Sean Hogg is waiting in the wings. I don't know if we can get him an extra chair. You can have my chair if you want.
He might stand, he'll be all right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there he is.
It's grand.
Right. Sean Hogg, you can kick off Cork Dublin.
Get a chair there.
Get a chair. Right. Right. Okay.
We'll all push over one and get him a chair.
The budget isn't that bad.
Jesus. Here we are.
Right. We'll throw down to the floor now in a second. But I just wanted to ask you, Sean Hogg, about Cork. Because I said to the lads during the week, are Cork the real deal? And the concern was maybe the concession that we've seen of scores, and again 3-19 conceded against Offaly last week. How do you rate Cork now when it seems there is a path here potentially to win the game against Dublin, see what happens to Clare and Wexford, might be Limerick again who they've already beaten? Are Cork the real deal for you this year?
I think they have a bit to go. Is this offer on the record? So I still think they have a bit to go to be labelled as the real deal. I mean, from a situation where they were on the floor in the Munster Championship, literally needing a result against Limerick down Park of Kiev, and they were literally, like, they were out of the championship in injury time. Pat was, I'd say, people were going to be looking for Pat Ryan's head on the plate the following morning, and they, out of nowhere, probably a bit of panic. I still can't believe why Kyle Hayes had to drag down Shane Kingston, because Shane still had an awful lot of work to do to get that goal. And as a defender, you just force the last player, just force the player to make the last play. But anyway, Shin Diller Corsi, Cork at the penalty, score, and then all of a sudden, the mindset has changed differently, and as we all know, it doesn't take that much convincing for Cork Fillet that they're going to be all Ireland champions fairly quick. Because we generally think we're going to win the All Ireland every year. Do you know, that's the mindset. No matter how good or bad we're going. But to answer your question, I'm a bit quite unsure where they're at, because I suppose the biggest criticism I'd have of Cork, say, not alone this year but the last couple of years, is consistency. On any given day they can beat a team like Limerick, but the following day, then, you know, a team they're expected to win, they can really struggle, you know. Kind of.
Paul Murphy had them beating Waterford by 12 points before the game this year, and then.
But sure, yeah. And so did everyone. And I'd say we read too much into Waterford's poor league campaign, thinking like that, and probably started believing a few stories that were coming out of Waterford, like that there was fighting in the camp and so forth and all that. And then. And it was like we went down to Welsh Park thinking like that all we needed to do was turn up. And even this Saturday, I'm nervy. I'd be nervous about this Saturday than I would if they win Saturday and play Limerick in a semi-final. I'd be very nervy about this Saturday because... Because I know if they were to play a team like Limerick, that naturally you're tuned in straight away. You know what's coming ahead of you. You just know that anything bar your best won't do. Again, a team like Dublin, don't, like, Cork people would view that as, like, that's a game we should be winning. I don't think we got a true reflection of Dublin in the Leinster final. We saw what they were about against Galway in the last, you know, round-robin game in the Leinster Championship. So I think they're in between that. Cork just need to finish Dublin as early as possible in the game. The longer Dublin stay in that game, that is dangerous proposition for Cork. You know, kind of, because you're just giving the team belief, more belief coming on the stretch. So, and I know the Offaly game last Saturday, it was a damned if you hammered Offaly by, you know, big scoreline, and then damned if you just barely got over them, you know, kind of. But like, Cork need to be showing intent from this weekend onwards. One positive, in my view, you know, that has kind of helped Cork this year is, so just say the second tier players of the last year, 2 years that have been, like to Shane Barrett, no, Brian Hayes, they've been around the panel, but they've really kind of stepped up game another level, which is, which in my view has helped the team, and that we're not becoming reliant on guys that we have been relying on for the last 10 years. Yeah. You know, will it be good enough? I hope so. If they don't, and I don't think they will. I know Pat Ryan myself. Jesus, played Hartley Cup with Pat Ryan and the man. Played underage Cork teams with him. He's fairly on the pulse, like, and like, if there's any bit of complacency, he'll knock that on the head straight away, especially against Dublin. I expect him to beat Dublin, you know. And then, like, that's a $6 million question. Are they good enough to beat Limerick? They showed they were good enough to beat Limerick earlier on. Yeah, probably.
I really hope that person's the first question from the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. People are reminding me where I am at the moment. I'm in Limerick, aren't I? Kinda. So
do what Murphy did. Just butter them up. Limerick are unbeaten.
Butter them up, yeah. Like, you see with the football championship over the years, beating a big team once in the year, but trying to beat them twice in the 1 year, that's a tall ask, you know, kind of. And like, I'd agree with Leo's kind of comments about Limerick going into the semi-final. Out of all the teams, there's probably an extra gear in them that we probably haven't seen yet. And then some of their key players, you know, kind of, I mean, Limerick team, they're not relying on everyone to have super games now. You know, like, they're even winning with Keane Lynch by his own standards being below par. What happens if today all of them, like, perform then, like, you know, kind of, rest of the competition is...
Scary process.
Banjacks, yeah.
Yeah. But, this is like the live Q&A on YouTube now at the moment. We still can't see you, so that's probably the great news here. Ash O'Reilly is out in the crowd at the moment. We're going to give six signed slitters to the first six questions here. Ooh. So, if you've got any questions for the panel, stick your hand up.
Yeah. Off you go.
And Ash will work away.
It's for Skell. Can Cork's defence learn to defend? You know, I think they've conceded, what, 3 goals in 4 of the 5 games? So, like, if you were a goalie behind them, like, what do they need to do to actually stop conceding 3 20-yard in every game?
I think Cork, let's say, all the defenders are hurlers first. And the way Cork are going at the minute, it's all attack ball. And they're really, like, focused on getting forward, you know, and talking about Coleman, Downey, etc., even Dice moving forward. I just think that there's, and I mean this well, right? There needs to be a certain meanness in Cork too. It's in Limerick in abundance, right? But I'm not talking about dirty belts. I'm just talking about the will to defend. There's pride in Sean Finn and Dan Morrissey and defending Baron Nash, etc. I just think if Cork, you know, kind of, I won't say develop that pride, but have this real meanness in defence, whereby it's nearly like an offence for them to score against you. You know what I mean? That's a major plus for Cork. I wouldn't be overly concerned being behind them. I think they're all really good defenders as individuals. I just think they have to get back in mind the house. There has to be serious intent to get back in mind the house. And I've seen it in the Limerick game and even the Offaly game, whereby when the opposition's on the attack, there's nearly like they're going at 3/4 pace to get back. Do you know what I mean? It needs to be 100% and mind the house. So I'd say it's more mental than anything technical or tactical. I think if they just flick the switch and say, not today, you know, it can be done. It certainly can be done.
You can get a slitter from Sean O'Gohalpin. Very good. Who's next? Right up at the front here. Little man, off you go.
Who is your favourite player of all time?
Listen, I'll take this. By the way, I apologise for all of our bad language when I realise that someone... it's probably been a learning experience. Sean Og, your favourite of all time?
Favourite player of all time? Man, that's a tricky one. For me, my favourite player of all time would be probably Brian Cochran for me. Why? Yeah.
you don't get away just going, yeah, that's me.
Yeah. Okay. So there's very few players in our game that have mastered both sides of the pitch. So the two that come into mind is Brian. So Brian started his career as a back. And then towards the end of his career, he converted into full forward. And then did a mighty job for us up forward. And Brian Whelan was the only fella from Offaly. Oh. Kind of class act.
Saying but, all yeah. the right things, Sean.
But I'm being biased. Kind of Brian Cochran for me. Okay.
Murph?
Henry for me. I know a lot of things Sean Oak said earlier, like we've often had the conversation about is you know TJ or Keane Lynch or any of these lads, have they transcended, you know, Henry? But just for me, in terms of when I was growing up, Henry was the man. He was doing things that hadn't been seen on the pitch before. When I started coming into the panel then, Henry demanded a huge amount of you. There was no kind of, you know, niceties with Henry. He just demanded a lot of you, and if you played well and if you worked hard, he rewarded you. I mean, just say well done. But that was huge when he said that was huge. So for me, I was very lucky that I watched him for years, then I got to play with him and against him. And for me, everything that Sean Oak said earlier, that absolutely stands. And just, you know, anything he said, he spoke about Jimmy Barry Murphy. That is my Henry Shefflin, where it's like he says anything, you go out and you want to take the hinges off the doors. You want to just fucking win for Henry. That's just what you want to do. So it'll be... Sorry? Take the hinges off the door. See, like, different lads have different styles. And, like, with Henry, we kind of mentioned on the pod a while back, a lot of the really excellent players, outstanding players, sometimes it just doesn't translate as a manager, because sometimes I think a lot of the top players... find it hard to translate what they see on the pitch and what maybe the 90% of other players, 95% of players who are, you know, not to say average, but good inter-county hurlers, they see the game completely different. And, like, Henry look at the game and say, well, why doesn't a player go up, win a ball, push a fella aside and stick it over the bar? Because he can't do that. So there's lots of inter-county players. You look at, like, the best inter-county managers, invariably they were good, very good inter-county players, but they weren't, you know, necessarily... Like, Brian Cody was a really good inter-county player, outstanding manager. John Kiely, really good inter-county player, outstanding manager. And lots of lads who come from that area of having to struggle and fight, they translated as a manager. So Henry possibly could. It's early days yet, but, you know, it's obviously he's had a tough time in Galway. And
Gail, why is your favourite player Davy Fitzgerald?
He's actually the only man ever to take me off.
Take you off?
The only manager ever to take me off, actually, Davy Fitz.
Mid-game.
Yeah, we're like... 15 minutes gone in the second half. Jackie Tyrrell actually got sent off in a game. We were playing, do you remember this, the Waterford Crystal? Was that a competition back years ago? I'm not sure what it's called.
Hold on. How does one of your defenders get sent off and you get taken off? What's the correlation here?
So basically, it was where the colleges and the counties mixed. So we were LIT, obviously, and we were playing Waterford, and they went full strength, and we went full strength. But Jackie had fouled Owen Kelly in a very, I was going to say, aggressive manner, questionable manner. So it was a red, okay? So he went off. And then what happened, Kim McGrath was playing at six, and he just mopped up absolutely everyone on the hookhouse. No matter where he was, where the ball went, he was there. So then Fitzy came down and just started effing and blinded, like, you know? And he just said, act your fucking age and do what you're told. And I just said, act your fucking age and stop giving out. And then 10 seconds later, substitution on the LIT team.
And 2 months later, he was missing a set of chairs and the table.
I see that's your favourite player.
Probably my favourite player was Peter Canavan. Growing up, I just loved watching him, just the way he just kind of evaded defenders, and he was so elusive, and he had such an aggression about him. Like that game in Croke Park where the jersey was kind of ripped off him, and he was just still kind of up for the battle. I always admired him. And then from a Clare point of view, Sherlock Nam was my principal. Now, if I went into the stories that went on in that primary school, we'd be here all night. But
that sounds very bad.
I, I'll tell one so that's not clipped. We were my brother was in the fifth class and I was in the sixth class, and there was a rafter going across the classroom. So we started racing each other across the hall. Yeah. So you'd hop onto the bookshelf, hop onto the rafters and climb across. So off we went anyway too, and there'd be with someone in the middle judging, but there was a teacher always patrolling, like, so you're trying to, right, we can go now, quick, race. Next teacher's turned back, go, race. But a teacher's walking past the window and they see us anyway climbing on the rafters. So Gerlach Land's punishment to every, he only saw one person do it, or the teacher only saw one person do it. He got about 30 people to admit to doing it. He was unbelievable. Yeah. And our punishment was, at lunch and break for a week, you were staring at the wall.
Oh my God.
But he was very good. But I suppose just saying that, Ger was my principal and he was brilliant, and he was a great principal. And when I was in primary school, like the 90 team of the 90s from Clare were knocking around. So Shawnee McMahon, I just loved the way he carried himself as a player, and he was just so comfortable on the ball, and he's such a brilliant striker of the ball, I suppose, nearly compared to at that time Dermot Burns. This generation, like, when a lot of players got a 65 then, it wasn't an automatic score.
Oh, it was a shoo-in.
Yeah.
It was a shoo-in. Like, he was hitting 65s back then. I mean, anyway, we won't get into it. I think 65 now becomes 21.
Who would you pick with one word? Yeah. We're going to get kicked out in a minute if I let this go all night.
Eamon Cregan.
Club mate of yours, you got to play alongside him. Next question.
Yeah, we have to find out this little man's name first and your club.
My name is Jack and I'm from My Van in Kerry.
Good lad. Good question.
Hi lads, this is just a question for everyone. If you were given the opportunity to go back over your careers and play any one match again to redo it, what game would you pick and why? I think I know yours, Leo. But, you know.
Take away the 5 minutes.
That's a free hit for you. Sean Og, any game you could replay?
The 2006, probably All-Ireland final against Kilkenny. We were going for 3 in a row. But on the day, Kilkenny were much better. But if we had our time again, we just didn't perform on the day. And probably that team around then, it would have been a nice kind of, it would have been nice icing on their careers if they had got 3 in a row. But yeah, we didn't. But yeah, 2006 for me, yeah.
Murph?
Like, replay from a good point of view, I'd say 2013 against Tip in Nolan Park. That was just, you know, it was just a great battle. It was a great day. Everything was brilliant about it. Replay from a bad point of view, 2016 final, like, you know, Tip tore us apart. And just, you know, that was obviously, anytime you lose an All Ireland final, it just really sticks. So, like, that definitely is the one that straight away, 2016.
I'd say the 2012 All Ireland final, first day. We made a couple of bad errors just before half time. We would have gone in probably 6 or 7 up at half time, but they brought it back to like 4, and it just, and actually Henry Shefflin said it was one of his greatest achievements that game, to put it back. And to watch it in person was sickening, but when you look at what he did at the time, it was awesome. But so if I had my time, I'd get Cordy to take him off and finish 2012 with a win.
What about you, Bud?
Yeah, I love the way Paul, how positive he is. Straight away he thought, if I had to replay a game, what game would it
one
be? A positive one. Straight away I was like, negative. What's the worst experience of my life? But Wexford 2014, I was marking Keith Rossiter in the corner, and he was getting the better of me, and I got red carded after 25 minutes and we drew the game. We lost the replay, and that was definitely low point. So that day in Cusick Park could have kept the head a bit better. So, yeah.
All right. Next question.
Yep.
Right, so this is mainly for Paul, for James and for Podge. Just obviously in the last couple of years we've grown accustomed to the round robin format, but obviously, well, ye had experience of the previous format beforehand. I'd just like ye to compare and contrast the two of them, and which one do you prefer? And for Sean and for Leo, I'd like to ask you that if ye had the opportunity to play in the round robin format, would you have liked the opportunity?
Okay, might have to be a bit quick fire on this.
Yeah,
go on.
I do like the round robin, basically, because you get to play a lot more matches in your home pitch in Nolan Park, and then also around the country as well. So more games is always, I think, a benefit. So if you'd ask me to pick one now at the moment, yeah, I enjoy the knockout, but the round robin, playing more games in your home field and more games in general, I prefer.
I was just exact same answer. In fairness, the more games you get, if you could lower the ratio between training
and games, because we came from championships whereby you might have three games in a year and maybe 100 training sessions. And training is all well and good, but the game is where you really want to, you want to focus. So we train to play. So round robin, where you could be, you're guaranteed a minimum of five games and potentially there are eight if you go all the way, is a far better structure than having two or three maybe.
Yeah, I definitely think it generates more support as well for the games, having those home games where fans that are close can travel, and you kind of develop that kind of soccer mentality where you're travelling home and away as a fan base, as opposed to maybe one day in Munster you get knocked out and your year is over. So definitely even playing in the round robin, I'd be very much pro the round robin. But it's just, I suppose, from a clear, or from a hurling point of view, only having five games left now. Like, I'd love if there was nearly four quarterfinals this weekend and eight teams, and it's, yeah, you know, that's it. But anyway, but no, the round robin's excellent.
Okay, Leo?
I'd love to try the round robin, to be quite honest. I just think, like, when you were beaten, you were beaten, you were gone, good looking, thanks. And you were doing training for 3 or 4 months, 5 months, and just au revoir, see ya. They, like, it's just totally disheartening. And not in, just the second part of that, I'm not all in favour of the condensed season, because between colleges, schools, underage hurling, and senior into county, it's, you're expecting an awful lot out of the senior into county player. And then to go back to the club, it suits some players, but the players that are really, really to the forefront with their clubs, and their clubs are strong enough to be getting, it's a hell of a long year. And for an amateur sport, you know, I just think it needs to be another month would do it the world of good, and just spread it out that extra little bit.
John Nogue?
Yeah, no, I concur with the comments here, and especially with Leo. I would have loved to play in the current system now, rather than back in the 90s. If you were knocked out, that was it for the year. So to have regular time, and then you don't have much time to be dwelling on what happened last, only because you're in, like, next game is up soon enough. But like Podge Collins, I feel like that it could be stretched over the summer. I mean, August is inactive. Like, you know, they can even stretch it out. You know, is it the end of July the All Ireland final is going to be played? I reckon they could stretch it out another month. You know, kind of to make it somewhat same back in the old days where people used to the first Sunday in September. You know, but.
All right, Ash, can we take one more question before we finish there? Make it a good one, whoever gets their hand up.
Well, we have two Slaters left.
Who, in your opinion, is top of the leaderboard for Huller of the Year so far?
Garrod Hegarty for me.
Murph?
Garrod Hegarty for me at the moment, yeah.
Glasgow?
Nicky Quaid.
Good show, yeah.
Raj?
Kyle Hayes for me, phenomenal.
Leo, casting vote here.
Kyle Hayes.
I think it's going to be a popular one. Folks, it's been a real pleasure. Can we put our hands together for Sean O'Gahalpy? Four-time All-Ireland winner, four-time All-Star, Paul Murphy. Mr. James Gale. I did that just to see his reaction. Podge Collins. And Leo O'Connor as well. Thanks so much to all of you for coming along tonight. By purchasing a ticket, you've helped out Focus Ireland, our charity for the night. Hopefully, we'll get to see somebody in the Burgos Theatre next month, because I'm sure All-Ireland Final's on the mind for the Limerick and Clare supporters, particularly who are sitting here tonight. It's been a pleasure to be back here in Limerick again, and we'll see you again very soon. Thanks a million for coming along.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.